What's up, everybody? Welcome to the How to Lead podcast, a conversation designed to help you lead yourself and those around you. I'm Adam, joined by Clay. Clay, before we hit record, we were talking about this idea of journeys that never end. We're recording this in the spring of 2024. I don't know about your kids, but my kids have a, no pun intended, spring in their step because they see the light at the end of the tunnel.
Yeah.
Around here in Texas, the last day of school is before Memorial Day.
Yeah,
so they're going to be done in May.
So they're literally counting down the days.
They are, yeah. And so it is like these kind of big statewide tests are happening. When I dropped my high school kid off this morning, we saw all the elementary school kids doing their park day because basically
field day. Over.
It's basically over.
Them, I got suspended from my fifth grade field day. That's another story for another day. But so when you bring that up, it really it's some PTSD for me.
Yes.
So but yeah, everything's kind of winding down and they're looking forward to the summer, which I remember when I first started working, I remember thinking like, oh my gosh, I can't wait for spring break. I need this right now.
Yeah.
Which is such a sobering thought when you get out of college and get out of that cycle of, you know, oh, the semester's over. Great. We have summer break, Christmas break, spring break, whatever it may be. We don't get those anymore, Adam. No, those are of years past.
Yes, we are on a journey that feels like it never ends, which I know you were feeling this morning as you were cleaning your kitchen up, being a great husband. And
yeah, well,
helping.
Yeah, Jenny, my wife, took the kids to school. I said, when you leave, I'm about to Mary Poppins this kitchen. I'm about to get going on it. And as I was just cleaning, I was just like, these flipping kids that are blessings.
Yes.
Okay. They're blessings. But wow. Yeah. It's like window washing. You, as soon as you get to the end of it, you know, oh, well, this one's dirty again. So we just got to start all over again. But yeah, that concept though, I love that phrase that you just said, the things in life that are journeys that never end. There are so many of them. I read a book recently that has deeply impacted me. And then I find out that of course you have read the book, and by read, you mean you listened to the book, which we all know in your mind qualifies as you read it.
I read it.
That's right. There's a book by David Brooks. Well, had you read any of David Brooks' stuff before, How to Know a Person?
Well, yes, I'd read. My first one was, he was a little snarky, Bobos in Paradise. Then I read Road to Character and liked that one a lot. Then read this one and then went back and listened to The Second Mountain.
That's the only one I had done before. I had done The Second Mountain.
Yeah.
So
he's
David
great.
Brooks is New York Times writer, author.
He started as a political guy, like a political pundit. He was on PBS NewsHour. He is often on NPR on Friday afternoons. I remember, I don't know if he still does this bit, but he kind of represents one side of the political spectrum and there's a person from the other side and they kind of have a friendly debate on some issue that happened that week. And thoughtful guy though.
Yeah, and I would say this book, I mean, it definitely should be on the list. If you haven't read it, worth reading. We're going to spend a few minutes talking about it today because I feel like he's tapping into a journey that never ends. He's basically, when I first heard about it, a friend was telling me, and I was like, it's a book on how to know somebody? Like, really? I mean, that seems so elementary, right? It's like how to make a peanut butter and jelly sandwich. Got it. Like, but what he does, it's obviously he's so intelligent. It's so brilliant. He's such a great writer. He creates a framework. Well, first of all, he tells such great stories about the power of knowing each other and why it's so important in our society today and why it's lost, as we'll talk about, in our society. But then he just gives a framework. He gives some real practical tips, but it's so well thought through, so well developed. The whole time I was reading it, I was just thinking of my kids need to read this. People and people that are team leaders need to read this. I wish my mom would read that. I mean, like so many people that I thought about that. The idea of knowing someone really is one of those skills that you can never get to the end of. We can always sharpen up on our ability to know another person. It's EQ in a way.
It really is. Yeah. And as a leader, you know, we know we got a lot of leaders listening to this. So either as an aspiring leader or somebody who is currently leading a team, this truly is a journey that is worth going on that never ends. And I think about a friend of the podcast, Horst Schulze, and his book, Excellence Wins, was one of the founders and longtime president of the Ritz-Carlton, group. And, you know, that's essentially what he talks about in Excellence Wins, is that excellence is in and of itself a journey that never ends. We can always get better. We can continue to do this. So if you as a leader want a reputation of being, you know, one thing about working with you is it just seems like you're always trying to get better at the people side of this job. That would be a phenomenal reputation to have. Like we can always get better at this. Clay, I put you, and I've said this multiple times on the podcast, I feel like as far as curiosity and getting to know people, I put you in the upper echelon of people that I know that do this well. And to hear that you read this book, you were impacted by it, and it makes you want to get better, just fires me up, because it's like you're on that journey, right? So even though you're really, really good and skilled at this, you believe this journey never ends. And sometimes that's really good and meaningful for our life.
Well, that's kind of you. I think part of, because I know the inside of myself and I know how quickly I'm tempted to bring it back to myself, which yeah. David, that's one of the ways he sets it up, is how many times have you gone to a party, right, where you just spent the last 2 hours and no one asked you one question about yourself, right?
Yep.
I mean, and the common moves that we make of one-upping each other, or even when we do the simple act of, you know, you're sharing something significant that happened between you and Jackie, and I go, oh, well, let me tell you what happened between me and Jenny lately. Some of that is tennis, you know, you bounce the ball back and forth. It's the way conversation works. But obviously there are times when it's really just a ploy for me to go, okay, cool, enough about you, Adam. Let me tell you about me, because that's what's most interesting to me. And so he does just such a great job of calling that out and really pointing us to a more virtuous way. Can I read a quote that I think sums up? He says, there's one skill that lies at the heart of any healthy person, family, school, community organization, or society. So the one skill, this is like, what was that movie back in the day that said there's one thing?
City Slickers.
Yeah, City Slickers. Oh my gosh, yeah. He says there's one skill that lies at the heart of anything healthy, basically. It's the ability to see someone else deeply and to make them feel seen, to accurately know another person, to let them feel valued, heard, and understood. And I'm not saying this is the end all be all, like this is going to solve every problem within your organization, but isn't it true, for those of you listening, the seven of you listening, isn't it true that if your organization was better at doing this, the culture in your organization would improve, you would be better with your clients, you would sell more? It's just, I think he's right, that at the heart of anything healthy lies this unique ability to see someone and to make them feel seen and valued and heard and understood.
Yeah, it really is. It's the heart of appreciation. If you think about the teams that you've been a part of, or the friends that you have in your life that are, again, like upper echelon in your life, this is probably the common characteristic, is that you feel seen, appreciated, respected, known, not judged, loved, valued, all those great words that we all want. And so this is it. So I love that quote. I think, again, I appreciated his vulnerability in this book of basically just him going, I'm crummy at this. And so it was a very vulnerable book for him as he went through and talked about it.
You know, most people are not great at this, which is why it is a journey that never ends. All of us can really grow in it. He lays out, I want to give a couple of these statistics just about how this is such a cultural problem and how we're seeing this cultural problem play out. 54% of Americans say that no one knows them well. Mm. That's tragic, right? That over half of Americans say nobody knows me well. The number of people with no close friends has quadrupled in the last 2 decades.
That's crazy.
There are 4 times more people that would say, I don't have any close friends over the last 2 decades. The suicide rate, this is just one that I grabbed on my own because I knew of how significant this is, but the suicide rate in America is the highest that it has been in 80 years. Mm-hmm. That's alarming. And then 45% of teenagers, so about 1 out of 2 teenagers, would say they're persistently sad and hopeless.
Hmm.
Mm. And then that, you know, the big headline that's been going around is just happiness in America is at an all-time low. Yeah. I mean, that's some data that came out just within the last month. But yeah, this is a significant issue of our inability to really not just know someone, but to make someone feel known, feel seen, valued, and understood.
Yeah. Well, good. Well, I love that he called it a skill, because that's something that's near and dear to our heart with the way we talk about leadership. It's a skill that we can learn. And, you know, as you're thinking about your summer and you're thinking about leading your team if there was a way for us to apply one of the core messages from Brooks's book here, it would be around this idea of learning how to get better at asking questions. And that was one of my favorite parts of the book, and I think something that's worth us talking about. So let's give a few examples of asking some terrible questions, and then maybe what are some better questions to ask. Because again, if you were to start to do this, and we'll talk a little bit more about application here in a few minutes, but if you just spent this summer just going, I just want to get better at asking my team questions this summer, I'm telling you, by Labor Day, I think the team will be different. And there will be a lot more cohesiveness, and it'll be a credit to you and growing in this.
I love that you brought this up as a challenge. We've planned over the next several podcasts to give you some practical, you know, you could turn around and do this today, tomorrow, challenges for the summer. If I were sitting in a seat leading a team right now, what I would do is I would say, all right, we're just going to do a little mini series, a mini challenge on this. And we're going to take every week for our team meeting, we're going to take 5 minutes, 7 minutes, 10 minutes, whatever it is. We're going to set a clock and we're just going to pepper somebody. We're going to pick somebody and we're just going to pepper them with questions. And we're going to ask them the right kind of questions. I think that's an excellent way to practice this because, like, you know, we've talked about skills. The bad news about skills is that you will not get better at them unless you practice them. But the good news is you can practice them. And if you do, you will improve on them. So it really is a way for you to model it, but it's also a way for you to practice something that you all want to get better at. Yeah, he gives a couple of categories that I just thought would be helpful to lay out. He says, here's a couple of categories of the worst, the most common questions, but really the worst kinds of questions that we can ask. Here's the first one. The kinds of questions that involve a surrender of power. Questions that we ask that involve a surrender of power, which I had never thought about it this way. And it doesn't, this is not an accusation that anytime you ask one of these questions, you're trying to force someone to surrender their power. But as I read it, I thought it really is true. When you ask somebody, so Adam, tell me, what do you do? Which is, you know, top three most common questions we ask.
Right.
That when you ask somebody that question, there is, in a sense, this new opportunity to judge someone, to accuse someone, and to force them to surrender their power, to go, oh, that's all you do? Wow, right? You know, because, which is what we're all thinking is like, how do I say what I do in the most flowery way that makes it sound like I'm a bigger deal than I really am? Would you have ever thought that about that simple question?
No, but I felt it. So like when he described that, it was like, I hate those questions.
Yeah.
But I don't know if I could have been able to identify like you did immediately of just going, oh, that's this kind of question, this kind of question, this kind of question. So,
well, here's a couple other examples of those would be, hey, so, you know, you meet somebody in the Dallas-Fort Worth area like you do every single day. Hey, what part of town do you live in? Where do you live?
Yeah.
Even that in and of itself is in a way, it forces them to surrender their power because they go, well, I'll tell you where I don't live. I don't live in Highland Park, right?
That's right. Live. Yeah.
Another question would be, where do your kids go to school, right? Yep. Oh, wow. You send your kids to public school? Do you not love them? Oh, wow. You send your kids to a Christian private school? You're one of those crazies, right? It just naturally, the answer almost forces somebody to surrender some power. And so he just encourages me, hey, stay away from that category.
I love that. Okay. What another category?
Second category, the kinds of questions that impose a limit on how it can be answered. So I would say this would be one of the, put this in the category of, you know, in the attorney world, this would be kind of a leading question, right? Yep. Something like their mom annoys them and then you say, oh, I guess so you and your mom are not that close.
Oh yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
It almost forces them to limit their answer, or even obviously yes, no questions would be put in that category as well. Questions that are not open-ended. I mean, the best way to, the flip side of this would be asking questions that are curious, that are non-accusatory, that are non-judgmental. Brené Brown talks about when she describes empathy, the first step is suspending our judgment, right? I have zero judgment. You can answer this however you want, and I'm for you on this. But when we force somebody to limit the way they're going to answer, the way they can answer it, it's kind of a dead end in a conversation in a way.
Yeah, I like this. This one resonates with me because this I had to learn the hard way in my marriage. My 13-year-old son and I are very similar. We like to ask, and he asked me this yesterday, who's your favorite artist, musical artist, like right now? And I know what he's doing. We're just kind of like force ranking some things, talking about some things, but it's a very definite answer that limits my answer.
Yes.
If I start asking my wife anything of what's your favorite, like tired head, eyes roll in the back of the head, she's done. Like, don't limit me on that. But if I were to go, what's one of the most memorable, or what are some of your favorites or things like that, then that's a lot more wide.
That's
kind of
that's,
a silly example,
easier to answer.
Yeah, easier to answer for sure.
Yeah, my wife, we have a similar issue. We would be driving on a road. We drive to Texas a lot because her family lives there, and we'll be about 7 hours in. And I'm staring at a map knowing exactly how long we've been in the car and how much longer we have. And she'll say, doesn't it feel like we've been in the car forever? And I'll always go, no, it feels like we've been in the car 7 hours and 37 minutes because that's how long it's been. And so we've had to learn how to navigate that dumb situation on my part. But here's the third category.
Yeah.
So the first one, any question that involves a surrender of power, any question that imposes a limit on how it can be answered. And then any question that's so vague, it communicates, I don't actually care how you answer this or if you answer this, right?
Yeah.
So
yeah.
This is the most obvious one, but this is the one that's like, oh my gosh, Adam, haven't seen you in a while. How are you?
Yeah. Yeah.
And you're like, I haven't seen you in 2 years. You want me to sum up the last 2 years and how I'm doing, right? Or, I mean, right now, you and I probably get this one a lot too, but I get this one pretty regularly from people. They go, well, how are your kids doing?
Yeah.
And I'm like, that is such a vague question. I don't think you even know the names of my kids, which is fine. I don't expect you to, but now you want me to just give like a general answer. I mean, how are they doing? I mean, one of them just lied to their friend and said that the camp this summer was canceled. And then she told all her friends about it and the moms got involved. So we're really worried about what she's doing and what's going on in her head. That's how one of them's doing. What you're going to go through all of them, right? I mean, it does communicate. Like, I don't really care what your answer is. I'm just filling up the space here.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, those are, yes, I get it. Those
are just kind of lazy in a way.
Yeah. So now what I feel, again, going back over this list, I'm reminded of what I felt when I first listened / read this book, which is, okay, well, now I feel really insecure because I don't know what a good question is.
Yeah, exactly.
I'm sure some of our listeners are going, well, I ask those all the time, so thanks for making me feel bad. I thought this was supposed to help me this summer.
Yeah,
so let's flip this and go, okay, here's some great questions to ask, and this is what you can use with your team.
Great. Well, back to your point, let me just say this to respond to what you said, because that's a thoughtful way to think about a thoughtful way to think about those bad questions. But, and I have found myself doing that over the last couple of days, is just going, oh, here I go. I just asked it, whatever. But I would just say, back to the journey that never ends, we're all getting better. This is
that's
not
right.
Pass fail. You haven't failed because you asked somebody how they're doing. It's good. Next time you ask it, and that's the question you can come up with, ask the question, right? Mm-hmm. But just note it and go, all right, next time I got to think of a better question. Like, how do I? So, and to your point, he gives some of those, right? Here's just four simple ones. Number one, how did you ... So how did you get your name? How did you end up in Dallas? How did you choose the college you chose?
That's good.
That question right there will unlock all kinds of conversation.
So good. That is excellent. That is excellent. Okay.
Number two, I love this one so much. Find a moment in someone's life and say, tell me about what life was like then. Or tell me about what you were thinking then. I've got a good friend who just started a coffee shop in Atlanta with a really unique mission of it. And I just the other day, because of this, I asked him, I said, tell me about the first moment you had a vision that you saw this in your head.
Yes.
And it unlocked such great conversation because he was able to go, oh, I'll tell you where I was. I'll tell you what I was doing. I'll tell you what I was thinking. And it was so interesting to me.
You did this. You did that with John Acuff. When we had John Acuff on, the very first thing you asked him was, tell me about the moment when you knew all it takes as a goal is going to be a book. And Clay, I remember I was like, that is such a great first question. And anybody that listens to the Better Man podcast that I host, I have ripped that question off. They will notice that I have started that with so many times and come to find out you got it from David Brooks. So
that's exactly right.
All right. Number three.
What's it like, right? What's it like to be an accountant at the firm you're at right now? What's it like this time of the year for an accountant, right?
Yep.
What's it like is just, I'd love to hear, tell me about what you're feeling. It is a very open-ended, allows them to give their emotions, or they can tell you concrete ways that it's like. And then last one, number four, in what ways? In what ways do your parents impact the way you parent? In what ways does your family heritage show up in your life today?
Yep.
In what ways are you still impacted by your first marriage or what? In that's a simple little prompt, but I love those. Those are worth writing down, keeping on a note card,
yes,
and talking about with your team. How did you, tell me about what's it like and in what ways?
That's so good. I mean, that's it. And so there's the challenge for the summer. So if you want to do, hey, pick somebody and everybody pepper them with questions, just to be very clear, this is not an interrogation. This is not to find them doing something wrong. The heart behind this is to get to know each other, right? To really get to know each other and hear some stories that maybe you haven't heard before. And I really don't see a downside to this. I mean, the worst that's going to happen is you're going to grow empathetic towards somebody, and your empathy is going to increase, and you're going to be able to relate to them better and be more patient with them and maybe even forgive them for some things that they've done that you just thought that was them. And now through all this, you maybe learn a little bit more of their story. There's only upside here if we do this. And I think if you put those four prompts up on a screen in that room and you said, for the next 15 minutes, you know, we're going to talk to Sarah and we all have to start a question with this, chances are, honestly, you're probably only going to get to two of them if you only give yourself 10 minutes, because Sarah's going to have so much to say. And that's not because Sarah talks a lot. It's because that was a great question. It was such a great question. And so,
can I, really this is the last thing that I'll add. Can I ask you a quick question? When it comes to flying, you and I spend some time on airplanes. Do you talk to the person next to you? Do you talk to the person you're standing in front of or behind in line?
Clay, you know me. What do you think?
I figured the answer was no. But the thing is, I'm an extrovert. I am a flaming extrovert, and I don't either. I mean, I pop the pods in as soon as I get there. But because of this book, it is a lot. I haven't forced myself, but I've just been more curious, because what I've found is people want to share about their lives.
That's right.
I have never had anyone say, "How dare you ask me that?"
Yeah.
No, instead they end up saying thank you, and you end up with the most interesting stories. I don't know if I've told you about the guy that I flew a couple of flights ago. I was sitting next to this guy who's he's been blind since birth. He was on the Canadian wrestling team in the Olympics 20 years ago.
Come on.
And he's a keynote speaker, and he was flying to Tampa to go speak to whatever the financial management company. I can't think of who they are. Okay. It's not Charles Schwab, but it's somebody like that. And he was going to speak to which I was like, oh, that's what I do as well. And then, of course, he's telling me all about, you know, I'm like, well, can I ask you all about being blind? Like, then, and how do you navigate this? He's traveling by himself. I mean,
it
was the most remarkable experience for me. And it was because I decided I'm not going to pop the pods in.
Yes.
I'm going to just for a moment. And then if he doesn't want to, cool, I'll take the cue. But I just would encourage you, just remember, everybody is dying to share about their life. You will feel better because of it. You will enjoy it. You'll have a story to tell, and it will allow you to grow as a person and as a leader.
Excellent, Clay. That is fantastic. That is a great book report. And listen, you know, my buddy John Cox says, if you read or listen to a book and you get one thing out of it, it was worth $15. So if you don't want to spend the $15, you just got one thing out of that book, and you can sit there and go, oh yeah, David Brooks, he wrote a bunch of things, and I remember the great questions, and you'll sound smart at the next party that you're at. But what I loved about this book is it was chapters filled with lists and very simple things like that, kind of un-David Brooksy, you know, in many ways,
because
a lot of his stuff is really not that list oriented. And this was a very unusual book from that perspective. So excellent stuff, Clay. How did you, tell me about what's it like and in what ways? Use that this summer. I'm telling you, by Labor Day, things will be different. Always great to be with you, Clay. Well, that's all we got for today's episode of the How to Lead podcast. You can always reach out to us via email. We can be reached at info@howtolead.work. That's info@howtolead.work. Every episode is mixed and edited by the team over at Sound of a Rose. You can learn more about them at soundofarose.com. Thank you so much for listening. We'll talk to you again next time.